a little background. I work with Community Voices at the Morehouse School of Medicine. Community Voices does policy research in the areas of men's health, health disparities, prison health care, and reentry. And my areas of specialty is prison health and reentry. We also have had 8 learning laboratories for the last 9 years that have been involved in looking at providing access to care and health services for underserved populations. My presentation today is going to provide a general overview of prison health care issues and then speak about some of the work that has been going on in our learning laboratories with people who are reentering their communities from prison and jail and what type of health resources have been available. And then I also will conclude with some policy recommendations. The face of the incarcerated, black men comprise 41% of the more 2 million men in custody, and black men aged 20 to 29 comprised over 15% of all men in custody in June 2006. The incarceration rate for black men was the highest among black men aged in the age range of 25 to 29. In mid-year 2006, the number of female prisoners rose at a faster rate than the number of male prisoners, but men were 14 times more likely to be incarcerated than women. When we look at incarceration, there are collateral consequences of being incarcerated. One, felony disenfranchisement, lose access to Medicaid, barring receiving welfare assistance and food stamps, public housing, being barred from that, employment, a lack of employment opportunities, and other collateral consequences includes losing connectedness with family and children. I want to speak specifically about Medicaid and how it really impacts the health of those who return to their communities once they are released. Many ex-offenders do not have health insurance when they return to their families and unable to receive Medicaid when they are incarcerated. Correctional institutions do not receive federal funds from Medicaid or Medicare to provide health services to prisoners. So while incarcerated, they are ineligible to receive Medicaid. And the problem arises when they are released. There's usually a lag time of weeks and months before those benefits can be reinstated. And so during this period of time, they are not receiving a continuum of care. When we look at the health status of inmates, those who are incarcerated suffer from a number of health care problems, including HIV/AIDS, tuberculosis, hepatitis, hypertension, diabetes, Alzheimer's. Many inmates also have poor oral health, which can complicate conditions such as diabetes and cardiovascular disease. And once these individuals return to their communities, their children and families, many of these communities are already overburdened. There is really no type of health services available. It really exacerbates the health disparities that exist in these communities. Just some very quick statistics. In 1997, you had 36,000 inmates that had hepatitis. Over 300,000 had hepatitis C. 130,000 had latent tuberculosis infection. The overall prevalence of asthma was 8.5%, diabetes was 4.8%, and hypertension was more than 18%. I mentioned oral health. When we look at our learning laboratories, and we had a convening of men back in the spring of 2007, and when they talked about different issues involving reentering into communities, one was oral health. What we are finding out, a number of them don't have access to health care. So when it comes to a simple thing of going for a job interview, you know, if someone doesn't have teeth or rotten teeth, it's very hard to make that impression. Also, it's very hard to, if you are suffering from pain, from poor oral health, it's hard to really go out and look for a job. It's hard to really maintain your health status in other areas. And that was the feedback that we received from many of our men in our learning laboratories. And when you look at HIV/AIDS, and these statistics are from the Bureau of Justice, there were an estimated 22,000 people incarcerated in state and federal prisons who were known to be infected with HIV. And the rate of confirmed AIDS among the prison population was 2.5 times higher than that of the U.S. population. And also, when you look at mental health issues, Many inmates suffer from them, including schizophrenia, anxiety disorder, post-traumatic stress, major depression, and bipolar disorder. So I'd like to move into a discussion of reentry programs or reentry interventions. We have a learning laboratory located, one of our sites is in Miami, Florida, and they have done work with the 11th Judicial Circuit Court of Florida Criminal Mental Health Project. And some of the key interventions that they have employed, they focus on mental health. So they work with Miami police officers to divert mentally ill patients into care instead of the jail. A court case management specialist collaborates with the community mental health center case managers to develop comprehensive aftercare plans. And they linkage to case management services will assist individuals to access the programs and services that are essential to rehabilitation outcomes. They have also are involved with housing and transition program, and also they provide identification cards to clients during discharge and aftercare planning. This card can be used at the local Social Security Administration office when applying or reinstating benefits. When we look at, we have a learning laboratory in Denver, and they have a men's health initiative. And looking at their program here, the demographics, 30% African American, 32% Hispanic, 33% Caucasian, 2% Native American, and 1% Asian, 1% other. Living situation, many are homeless, most are homeless, others are in jail. Some are living independently, and the average age was 41 years of age. And what their program focuses on are using patient navigators. They meet with men in the jail prior to release, pre-release planning. After release, they take applications for publicly funded health programs, and they connect men with access to primary care, medication support groups, and other community resources. And they also provide bus tokens and co-payments to assist in obtaining identification. A lot of times, if you don't have a mode of transportation, you can't get to the services, and if you are unable to pay for identification, there's no way you can qualify or get the documentation necessary to enroll in some of the programs. We also have a Community Voices site in Michigan. The health department there participates in a discharge planning aftercare and community support committee. We drafted a number of recommendations which are ensuring that all clients have a clear discharge plan in place, ensure that ID cards are issued before release. The creation of a reentry chain for which the client involving workers from each pertinent agency or system, and also developing holistic and comprehensive assessment tools that can be applied across all systems. The health department provided training to staff at both the parole and probation offices on the Ingham Health Plan so that they could refer ex-offenders for enrollment in IHP as soon as possible when they return to their communities. Also in Michigan, there's the Northwest Initiative. And this organization, RO, is made up of ex-offenders, families of ex-offenders, and their mission is to educate, because what we're finding out, public education is very important, because a lot of people are not aware of the issues that many ex-offenders face when they reenter into their communities. And also, part of this initiative also reconnects ex-offenders with resources present in the community. I also would like to mention Baltimore. Baltimore, we have a learning laboratory in Baltimore, and they created one of the first men's health clinics in the United States. And this clinic, a large number of the clients are men reentering into their communities from prison and jail. And with this program, Baltimore also has a reentry initiative. And so they refer a lot of these men to the health clinic, where they are given within a week a referral, a physical exam, and they're also routed to other type of healthcare healthcare programs to address their needs, oral health, substance abuse, mental health, and they've also connected with programs in the community looking at issues of housing and employment, because what we are finding is that you can address the healthcare needs of this population, but there's collateral things such as housing. If someone has nowhere to live, their health definitely is impacted. If someone is not able to work, how can they afford medications or even to go to the doctor? So these are other issues that we are finding as we delve into looking at the healthcare issues of this population. So what can you do? One thing that we do is we try to create awareness. We do fact sheets, we have surveys, policy briefs, we have meetings and convenings. In April 2007, we had a meeting on Capitol Hill when members of Congress came and listened to the stories of our men. And we were thanked because a lot of times the members say they are so far removed or there's so other many priorities. It really helps to hear the human story of what people are going through. Supporting legislation. The Second Chance Act of 2007 is currently on the Hill, and they're working towards passage, and that provides demonstration grants, drug treatment incentive grants, the creation of a National Offender Reentry Resource Center. It also provides resources for children and families and prison-based family treatment programs. And some policy recommendations that we have come up with through our work is to require pre-release reentry programs to be established in local, state, and federal correctional facilities and ensure that individuals receive medical, legal, and social services needed for successful reentry. Create community justice policy centers where those returning can receive comprehensive medical, legal, and social services. For example, in Prince George's County, Maryland, they have a program that houses when people, not only people who reenter, but just people in the community when it comes to receiving health services, it's one-stop shopping. Not only can they receive health care, but they can also, someone from social services on site, someone from probation is on site, and they really work together to try to make sure they address all the needs that this individual has. We also, in order to expedite reinstatement of benefits, states should not terminate Medicaid coverage for those incarcerated. Instead, the benefits should simply be suspended. It is not required by federally that benefits be terminated, and we find if benefits are suspended, then it really cuts down the lag time in having them reinstated when people return into their communities. And some other recommendations we have made is expand health care coverage, eliminate co-payments sometimes in prison and jails in order to get certain medical services. A co-payment is associated with it. And extend Medicaid coverage to all those who are returning to the community. And just would like to end on a note that we are having a conference in April 2007 looking at these issues around reentry at the Morehouse School of Medicine from April 9th through 11th, and then also we're having a gala on the 11th to honor Ms. Soledad O'Brien and the work that she has done with underserved populations. You all are very invited. And in conclusion, in order for those returning to their communities to fully reintegrate back into society, to provide for their children and families, and to contribute to their communities, it is imperative that they receive the necessary health care, financial resources, and social supports. When the formerly incarcerated are not able to provide the basic necessity for their families, as a society, we are perpetuating a vicious cycle of imprisonment that will affect future generations. And I'd like to say thank you, and please visit our website for further information.